A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's sing the sky so blue. We better sing it. I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day.
My pocket's empty. My cupboard's bare. But call me illogical. I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, hey, hey. It's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
Yeah.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
And it's a sunny day and already 76 degrees in downtown Salt Lake City. Good morning. Welcome to the Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos and Ton Bettis with you this morning. We'll take your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Good morning, Ton.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm a bit crabby this morning. I'm just going to own up to it. And how can anybody be crabby on a gorgeous day like this?
Oh, I don't know.
First
it
world problems. That's it. The pandemic is starting to weigh a bit on me. That's the thing.
Oh, I got the email from station management saying we're going to continue the isolation for longer, and I understand why, but it's like, man,
I
go back in the station.
It's tough. You know, we love the people we work with, and I miss you, Ton. I miss seeing you every Saturday.
Yeah, it's been a couple of months at least now, and I would love to come back in, but I guess being safe is more important, so...
It certainly is, and it is a beautiful day, and we do have a lot of fun things to talk about in the garden, so I know that's going to turn my mood right around. I missed you last week with all of our coverage of the funeral and the protests. I wasn't able to be with you, but sounds like you guys still went on. You went forward.
We managed.
You managed.
We
okay.
did.
I wanted to talk about Canterbury bells as we begin this morning. Not only are they just such a beautiful plant, I don't know if you have any experience with Canterbury bells.
Well, they're a long-grown plant. They were popular in Victorian times and before. And if your parents or grandparents had a lot of flowers in the garden, they most likely grew Canterbury bells along with a number of other things. And so they have a long history in our gardens.
You know, it's really funny. I mean, that is my history, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it is just the emotional attachment I have to some of the things that I grow in my yard. My grandmother had always grown Canterbury bells, and of course, I took starts from her garden years and years ago, and luckily, I still have a few that are reseeding. I do take seeds from them, but it seems like I never get around to actually planting the seeds every year. I think I just kind of miss the time when I should plant the seeds. But such a beautiful plant. And you're right. I mean, not only do they come from Victorian times, they kind of look Victorian and you don't see them around much.
You don't. They are a plant that will self-sow, like you said, so they will reseed themselves and they will just kind of pop up here and there. And if you catch them when they're younger and know what they look like, you can move them around to where you want to. And so I think that maybe some of the reason they're not quite as popular is that if you grow them from seed, the first year they just kind of sit there as what's called a rosette and stay low to the ground. And mm-hmm. It's their second year that they actually pop those flowers up. And depending on where they're at in the yard and the variety, they will bloom through early summer. And some of the more modern ones will bloom a lot of the summer.
Caitlin has put up a post on the Greenhouse page, the Facebook page, of my Canterbury bells. And it's really funny. I'm not sure if you can tell from the picture, but you can kind of see my tomato trellises in the background because these have actually popped up in the middle of my vegetable garden. And I'm not going to take them out, right?
No.
I've made sure that they're getting water. And they're just such a beautiful bunch of flowers. But well, it's funny how they do kind of move around.
They do, and not only are they beautiful, but because they're coming up from seed and they are, I guess we could call them a little bit wild, having them in your vegetable garden is actually a benefit because they attract beneficial insects in, where not only will you get pollinators, but it also harbors other beneficials that will naturally keep pests down in your garden.
Right. I have seen a million bees this week. I'm not sure what kind. They don't look like bumblebees, just the smaller bees that are really attracted to the Canterbury bells.
Yeah, there are oftentimes certain species of insects. So there's bumblebees and our honeybees, of course, but then there's a whole host of what we call hoverflies that are mimics that look like bees, but they're really flies and moths and other things that will get in there. And that diversity of flowers in the yard just goes so far to protecting the environment. But, you know, again, back to the natural pest control, to where the more diversity you have, the fewer pests you're likely to have in your yard.
I love the diversity of colors when it comes to Canterbury bells. I mean, I never know if I'm going to get the beautiful pinks or the vibrant purples that come up. And I'm not sure how that sowing process takes place in my yard, because they kind of do whatever they want.
They do. And especially if you get a couple of different varieties together to where you have different genetics and they're cross-pollinated, those can be very beautiful. And it always is fun to just to see what the mystery will be next year until they start to flower. And they're one that I think should be used more because they're just so easy to grow.
We've talked about, you know, how healthy it is for you mentally to get out in the garden, work in the soil. We haven't talked as much about, for me, I think the reason I love it so much is just that love that my grandmother helped create in me, instill in me, right? And that I continue to remember her through the things that she has shared with me. And we, you know, we don't often talk about how we have this emotional attachment to things that we grow.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. My grandfather was a very good hobby horticulturist, I guess, is what you could call him. And he taught me a lot about gardening and plants when I was younger. And I just thought everybody knew a lot about that. But he was a rosarian. And so as my yard progresses, one thing that I will do is have several of his favorite roses, even though they're older varieties, in my yard, just to kind of remember him and bring me back to those better days when, you know, the carefree days, spending time with Grandpa.
Right. If people would like to have some Canterbury bells, don't have some in their yard. Like I said, I don't usually see them. I can't even remember the last time. I don't ever remember seeing them in a greenhouse. How would they go about finding them?
They would probably be sold in the perennial section, just because they have to be planted almost like foxglove. And they bloom the next year. Now, there are newer varieties out that the nurseries can trick into blooming that first year. And those varieties will, you know, go a lot of the season. So modern breeding has made them a little, especially if you're not patient, a little easier. But if you're going to find them, they will be in the perennial section most likely, and they may be sold under the name campanula or upright campanula. There's actually, or bellflower is another name that they may be found under. The Canterbury bells are one species, and there's some other upright bellflowers that look similar, but if you're going to find them, they're most likely not going to be in the annuals in the greenhouse.
Okay, so don't look for them with all those flowering plants, right?
No.
Okay. Well, that explains it, right? The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Or you can text us this morning at 57500. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Val, your question is up first on the KSL Greenhouse.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton taking your questions this morning, 801-575-8255. We know you have a lot of questions. Let's take a call this morning from Val in Layton. And good morning, Val.
Oh, good morning. Hey, I had a question on Arctic blue willows that line my backyard. Been there about 12 years. And over the last few years, there's been more and more dieback on them. And when I cut the dead stuff off, sometimes I see insect burrows and sawdust. I wondered if that was an insect causing this or if they were just a secondary invader.
It could be both. The blue Arctic willows have not really been studied a lot to know what insects primarily get into them, but being willow shrubs, you know, they're not the huge trees, but being willow shrubs, they will still attract a number of insects that like to live in willows. And so, you know, if you could find, especially the adults, USU might be able to ID them. And there is some potential that, you know, and I'm not saying just wholesale use insecticides, but you may be able to try a soil drench with something like imidacloprid to see if it helps. But the Arctic willows, and willows in general, just live by a strategy of living strong and fast and growing fast and then kind of declining. And it's not often you see willows, unless they're just ideally situated, that are over, you know, 20 or 25 years old.
So it's natural for them to have a lot of dieback.
It is. And the way that they handle a lot of those insects is they try to sucker up and form new plants and outgrow them instead of defending themselves against them.
And you said it might be worthwhile trying a soil drench with imidacloprid?
Imidacloprid or Merit. If you were to go to any of your local garden centers, you've got J&J and Valley near you, plus I think IFA and Layton Farm and a few others, Dallas Greens. But any of those stores will have a systemic soil drench that you can mix up in a 5-gallon bucket and then just pour around the base of the shrubs. And it'll tell you the rates you need to use.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Val, thank you for your call this morning. Ton, our next listener has a dwarf pixie crunch apple tree. It's about 6 years old, hasn't blossomed yet, and they're wondering what they can do to get it to bear fruit.
Well, it's one of those things that a lot of the old timers would take like a wiffle ball bat and not beat the tree to the point.
Say, are you talking about tree abuse here?
Yes.
Oh.
I am, but only limited. You know, we don't want to.
You're serious. So,
yeah, they would. I mean, I've heard tales of cherry growers up in the Davis County area actually modifying things like windrowers with hoses on the end, and they would drive up and down the rows beating the trunks with these hoses in the theory that it shocked the trees into producing flower blossoms. I don't know that that really works. There's no scientific evidence saying it does, but it depends on the rootstock that that Pixie Crunch apple is grafted onto and whether it's, there's a term called precociousness in fruit, and certain rootstocks have more precociousness than others. And what that means is they cause the trees to start forming blossoms much earlier than they would have if they were seed grown. So a lot of it depends on the rootstock and along the pruning, and they need to make sure that they are following proper pruning techniques. And so they might want to go to USU's YouTube page and look up apple pruning. Now, one thing, Maria, about this Pixie Crunch apple, it is probably the best apple on earth that nobody has ever heard of.
Wow.
I like it a lot better.
But it's not the best if you can't get it to grow the fruit or bear fruit.
True. The only place to get it, I believe, is Gurney's. They have exclusives on it, and it's not an inexpensive tree. You'll pay $75 to $100, but the apples off this particular tree are among the best apples I've personally eaten. Now, when I say that, remember, flavor and taste is very specific to the individual. And because I like it doesn't mean you will, you know. But it's kind of along the lines of the texture of the, what's the one that right now everyone's just gaga about? Anyway,
I don't know. Not a huge apple fan. I mean, yeah. I like apples, but I'm not, you know.
Yeah, but this Pixie Crunch has a lot better flavor, and it's a lot easier to take care of. And so if you are wanting an apple, especially on a dwarfing rootstock, it may be worth the $75 or $100 to order it.
Okay, but other than proper pruning, there's nothing else that they can do, and
just be patient.
Tree abuse?
You know, sometimes an apple can take anywhere from 10 to 15, maybe 20 years before it forms blossoms. The rootstocks are on usually prevent this, but I see about 1 in 10 or 1 in 20 trees just take forever to start producing blossoms.
All right. A next listener has an area where they have land, but there's no water hooked up there, and they're wondering if it's possible to start some trees there, and what type would they work if they were going to do that?
That's hard.
They all need water. But
they will need water to establish anything. I think their most likely bet is to use what's going to be native to those types of areas. And so single leaf pinyon pine or regular pinyon or some of the junipers would be the most likely. But for especially the first 2 or 3 years, they're going to end up hauling water out there every couple of weeks to get them going. Now, if they wanted to maybe try some seeds that were planted in the fall and just naturally came up and formed their own root systems, that might be a possibility, but it becomes very difficult to, practically impossible to establish trees. It's because it's not only just getting them started, but the reason there are no trees there to start with is because there's not enough water. And so it's going to just compound unless they can use something that's super drought hardy like the junipers or the pinyon pines.
Okay, let's take a call from Wayne in Linden. Good morning, Wayne.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing very well. What is your question?
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have some peonies that I raise, and they're along a fence line. And every year after they get through blossoming, a little later on, then they get powdery mildew on the leaves. I wonder if there's anything I can put on that to prevent that.
Are they being hit by overhead sprinklers?
Yes.
That's going to be a lot of the cause because that water splashes and spreads the spores around. And so one thing, if it's practical, you could do is readjust your sprinklers and maybe just run drip hose or something along the base of those peonies to irrigate them. That would help.
Okay.
And then the other thing is you may have to do some preventative spraying. You could start with a spray called neem oil, which you would mix up and then just maybe spray weekly and make sure you spray the tops and undersides of the plants. And neem oil is preventative toward powdery mildew. You could try a fungicide, but I try to avoid that unless you are starting to see active infections show up. And if you can get those peonies into August or early September and then the powdery mildew develops, that's fine. They'll come back the next year and they've had enough time to get the energy they need. But if that powdery mildew develops in June, you know, then it's a different story.
Yeah, it usually starts on probably middle of July, something of that sort.
Okay. Yeah, so you might slow it down with that neem oil. Another brand name of it is Triple Action.
Okay.
That you could find in local garden centers. But I would start with that because it's fairly friendly towards beneficial insects. And there's more research coming out showing that overuse of fungicides really can... They're not fatal to pollinators, but they do some things to pollinators and honeybees that I really don't like. And so I'd like to minimize the use of fungicides towards stuff like neem oil, which is, I'm not going to say natural, but just more friendly toward insects in general.
Okay, Wayne, thank you so much for your call this morning. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions this morning at 57500.
A gun in the face. Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.